You bet that living in Florida changes the way I dress every year. During the summer, it is way too hot and humid to not wear something that is light and breathable. And now that I found Quince, I've been wearing their clothing all the time. I wear my linen shorts as often as I possibly can, and I've been so much cooler even inside the house. I haven't had to run the air conditioning as much, which is kind of crazy. And right now you can get Quince European linen pants and shirts, perfect for this weather, starting at just $34. Their tees are also soft and easy to wear. Lightweight cotton sweaters are perfect for cooler summer nights. They have options for everything. Plus, their prices are 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they work directly with ethical factories to cut out the middleman, so you're not paying for the markup, you're just paying for the quality. Plus, I've noticed that they have some other things that I'm very tempted to get. Everything from sofas to ceramic cookware, premium bedding, all sorts of stuff. But if I was to recommend just one thing, go get some linen shorts. It will change your summer, I promise. So go, elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/ringslore for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/ringslore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ringslore.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
So today we're still working our way through Chapter 2 of The Fellowship of the Ring, and I promise we will get through this chapter eventually, but not today. This episode is going to be the second to last episode about Chapter 2. And there's a good reason for that. I've discovered something in here, or at least I've noticed something that I think is worth focusing on a little bit more. It's not a huge reveal, but it is the first time that I've noticed a correlation between a very specific word used for the ring and someone else. And we'll get to that. And of course, we're going to break down a whole bunch of details. There's more conversation between Frodo and Gandalf and their perspectives and the hidden things within the conversation. And Sam doesn't quite show up yet, although he does walk past a window, but we'll get there. And I know this is going slowly, but bear with me. There's some cool stuff to talk about. So let's get into it. So on the previous episode, Gandalf and Frodo were discussing the ring, and we ended with Gandalf challenging Frodo to try to dispose of the ring, try to break it, use a hammer or melt it, see what happens. And so Frodo takes the ring out of his pocket and he looks at it. And we end up with a very interesting moment. It's described as being plain and smooth without device or mark. Nothing that he can see. But here's the description I really want to focus on. The gold looked very fair and pure, and Frodo thought how rich and beautiful was its color, how perfect was its roundness. It was an admirable thing and altogether precious. Now, the things about this that immediately stand out to me is the use of the word precious, of course, and then also how he seems to have already such a fondness for it, even though he was just told that this could be the doom of all peoples of Middle-earth. So there are at least those two things going on, but I think there is a third. Now, let's discuss those first two. Precious, of course, is the same thing that Gollum calls the ring, and this is something that we see over and over again. When the ring takes hold of somebody, they start to use the word precious. And precious is important. It's not that we're just echoing the same word, although that's important as well, but the fact that it is precious, and specifically the word precious, is important. So like a middle schooler doing a project, let's pull up Merriam-Webster's dictionary and look at the definitions. Okay, so first of all, of great value or high price. Well, any golden ring would be of great value and high price if it was made with real gold. So that tracks, but it means more than that. The second definition is highly esteemed or cherished. Now, you could also assume that an heirloom passed down from somebody who was basically your surrogate father would be something that was highly esteemed or cherished. But of course, that is not the case for most of the people who have wielded the ring. I mean, I guess you could say Sauron made it himself, so he would have found it precious because it was something that he crafted and put his own power into. And I guess you could say that somebody like Isildur would have found it precious as well because of all the cost it took to get it due to the conflict with Sauron and the deeper meaning of it. But also, I guess Gollum got it when he was Sméagol and killed his friend for it. So I don't know that high esteem or cherished really fits in that scenario. So I guess you could justify some of them as feeling that it was of high esteem or cherished. But also, there's something about that definition that just, it doesn't seem to really live up to everybody having that same perception of the same thing, unless it was affecting them in some sort of supernatural way, which of course we know it is. Okay, so let's talk about the other part. Frodo is already looking at the ring and basically fawning over it. It's beautiful, it's perfect in its roundness. He's using words that mean that this ring is better than anything else. It is better than any other ring that he saw. And yeah, maybe it was crafted in an immaculate way, but we don't know Frodo as being somebody who was particularly fond of jewelry. That isn't something that we've heard before. So there's clearly something going on here. And that is the obvious level of this. Everybody who's listening to the show probably could have pointed those things out so far. There's another piece here. The use of the word fair. The gold looked very fair and pure. When was the last time you described a piece of jewelry as looking fair? Now, we could probably say, oh, that looks like a very pure diamond, or that's a very pure piece of gold, but a fair diamond, a fair piece of gold? That's not a word that we usually use with jewelry or rings, but it is a word that shows up in another place, absolutely connected with Sauron. Let's go back to the Silmarillion. In the section of the Rings of Power in the Third Age, you might remember this, there's a quote about Sauron presenting himself as Annatar to the Elven Smiths. It says, "But Sauron guided their counsels, and he grew ever greater in their favor. For in that time he was not yet evil to behold, and he had a form that was both fair and wise." Not pure, because that wouldn't have made sense, but fair and wise. "And he took the name of Annatar, the Lord of Gifts, and they had at first much profit from his friendship." Notice also that this isn't the only place that the word fair is used in descriptions of Sauron when he was in the form of Annatar and manipulating people, and not just the elves. Remember, he goes to Numenor. In the Akalabeth, it says, "Therefore he humbled himself before Ar-Pharazôn and smoothed his tongue, and men wondered, for all that he said seemed fair and wise." Now notice in this specific quote, fair and wise is not the description of necessarily the way he looks, but the words that he is saying. His manipulation in both of those regards has to do with appearing or saying things that are fair, and in this case, wise. And this shows up again when he arrives in Numenor. The quote is, "Upon the ship which was cast highest and stood dry upon a hill, there was a man, or one in man's shape, but greater than any even of the race of Numenor in stature. To many he appeared fair, to others terrible, but to some evil." And what's interesting about this one is this also harkens back to the way that the wise among the elves were distrusting of Annatar, because they could tell that something was false about him, but they weren't sure what. And in a very similar manner, looking at the ring and understanding what the ring is gives you a similar level of conflict. It looks fair, but yet you know something else is going on. You know that there's something darker inside, and yet it's trying to convince you that that's not the case. We also get one more quote. He was robbed now of that shape to which he had wrought so great an evil, so that he could never again appear fair to the eyes of men. This is the downfall of Numenor when he is, well, dropped into the ocean because the island is sunk. But we are reminded again that he was fair to the eyes of men, just like this ring appears fair to those who look at it. And it strikes me that there is a parallel here, not just in the use of the word fair for the ring and the ring being a form of deceit in a way, a form of corruption of others, but also in his words, but in himself as well. This is Sauron's modus operandi, I guess you could call it, or at least it's one of his. He often uses fear and torture and things like that as well. But at some point in the history of Middle-earth, he realized that you can get more with honey than you can with a stick. Is that the quote? I don't remember how that goes. But anyway, you guys know what I'm talking about. So what I like about this is the fact that if we know this history, if we know Annatar, if we understand who Sauron is and the kinds of things that Sauron does, we can see that reflected in the ring here. And again, putting myself in the mindset of somebody reading this for the first time without that knowledge, and then getting that knowledge, it all becomes even more clear. We're seeing a similar kind of situation play out, but through the ring instead of him posing as somebody else. Now, at this point, Frodo decides to try to throw the ring in the fire, but he can't. He takes it out, he intends to fling the ring, and then he finds that, quote, he could not do so, not without a great struggle. He weighed the ring in his hand, hesitated, and forcing himself to remember all that Gandalf had told him, and then with an effort of will he made a movement, as if to cast it away, but he found that he put it back in his pocket. This feels so similar to the moment when Bilbo means to leave the ring and then puts it back in his pocket before leaving Bag End. We're seeing parallels there as well. And then Gandalf laughs grimly. I love that line. It is not a happy laugh. It is a, you see, this is what happens. And we're told that he could not make Frodo do it except by force, but that would break your mind, break Frodo's mind. Meaning that the ring has already worked its way into Frodo's mind and connected it. We keep being told again and again and again that people are not capable of destroying the ring, let alone leaving it somewhere, and that Bilbo is the only one who's ever done it. That is how powerful the ring already is. And then Gandalf explains more about the fire. He talks about how you can't break it, you can't put it in a fire and melt it. No smith's forge in the Shire could do it. The anvils and furnaces of the dwarves could not do it. Dragon fire could do it, but there's no more dragons left on Earth that the fire's hot enough because they're all descendants. And remember, there's this pattern in Middle-earth of things declining over time. And here's where we get one of the few references to Ancalagon the Black, not even Ancalagon the Black, the largest dragon to have ever existed, could have harmed the One Ring, the ruling ring, for that was made by Sauron himself. Now, it's not that his fire couldn't have harmed it, because we've already heard that dragonfire could melt it, and Ancalagon is one of those ancient dragons, and so therefore could have melted the ring. But he would not have had the willpower to do so because it was made by Sauron, which is interesting. We don't know specifically how Sauron and Ancalagon would have interacted. And there is speculation about how much Smaug would have fallen under Sauron's control should he have actually reached out to him in time. And this seems to prove that he probably would have. If Ancalagon the Black couldn't have attacked the ring due to Sauron himself being in charge of it, then chances are the other dragons would have fallen in line behind Sauron too. Which raises some questions as to why Sauron didn't use dragons more often. I guess they were hard to get. And then we're told that, yes, you have to take it to the cracks of doom in the depths of Orodruin, the Fire Mountain, which is what Orodruin means, and cast the ring there if you want to destroy it. And Frodo confirms this. He says, I do really wish to destroy it. Or, well, to have it destroyed. I am not made for perilous quests. I wish I had never seen the ring. Why did it come to me? Why was I chosen? Which is a very deep question. It opens up the questions of why are any of us chosen? Why do any of us live through the times and the difficulties and the struggles that we do? This is a question about the problem of evil, theologically, really. And Gandalf gives an answer, but he says such questions cannot be answered. You may be sure that it was not for any merit that others do not possess, not for power or wisdom at any rate, but you have been chosen, and you must therefore use such strength and heart and wits as you have. And what's interesting about this is that I think Gandalf actually does answer the question in the way that he doesn't answer the question. Here's what I mean. He's basically saying, Frodo, you weren't chosen for things like power and wisdom, because clearly you are not among the wise and you're not extremely powerful. You were a little hobbit. So don't worry about that. Just realize that this is what is happening. You were chosen, so you have to deal with this. Unfortunately, that's just the way of the world. And you have to use your strength and heart and wits that you have in order to deal with the situation as it is. And what he's really saying here is your strength and your heart and your wits will be enough. That is why you were chosen. It has to be. Those are the only things that you possess that will allow you to make your way through this situation. So therefore, you must have been chosen for your strength, heart, and wits. And remember, Gandalf doesn't believe in coincidence. Gandalf knows that the entire world has been orchestrated by Iluvatar, and that he has foreseen that this is what would happen. And he knows that in the end, things will work out. So this must be the solution to the question. And yet Frodo doesn't realize it. He says that he has so little of these things. And then the conversation shifts to, well, you're powerful and wise. Why don't you take the ring? And of course, Gandalf reels at that. He responds, no, with that power, I should have power too great and terrible. And then he's very specifically says here that over me, the ring would gain a power still greater and more deadly. And we're all familiar with this. Even if you've only watched the movies, this is a very clear moment in the movies. We see Galadriel deal with the same thing and talk about how she would turn into a dark queen, all of that. But here's the line I find most interesting about this section. His eyes flashed and his face was lit as by a fire within. Now, is that fire within his own spirit fighting against the temptation? Because the next thing he says is, do not tempt me, for I do not wish to become like the Dark Lord himself. Or was the fire within the ring that he was wielding, the ring of fire, being used in that moment to resist the temptation by inspiring his own heart, his own will towards good things? Or maybe a combination of both? But I like how his face is lit by a fire within. And then something's revealed about Gandalf that is absolutely crucial. It is something that points to the very core of who he is. He says, yet the way of the ring to my heart, the way that the ring would manipulate me, is by pity. Pity for weakness and the desire of strength to do good. Very specifically, he's saying here that the ring would use his inclination, his love of people who are weak, his pity for those who suffer, his desire to use strength to help others, and would manipulate that very specific desire, the best parts of him, into something that is actually evil. And he reveals something else as well. He says, the wish to wield it would be too great for my strength. Now, you might think that that contradicts the idea that the fire within him was resisting the wish to wield it. But there's two different things going on here, and the words are specific. He's resisting taking the ring. Wielding it is to use it for something. Those are two different things. One is possession of, the other is wielding, using, actively engaging with it. And so he's saying here, the wish to wield the ring would be too great for my strength. So once he had it, he would absolutely end up using it. I shall have such need of it. Great perils lie before me. And this is also foreshadowing. He's revealing that he knows the path forward is long and dangerous. And if he had the ring with him, he would be tempted in moments of need to use it. And then that would be his downfall. And then we get this moment of relief. He went to the window and drew aside the curtains and the shutters. Sunlight streamed back again into the room. This is a moment where the dark conversation that they've been having is lifted not only by the light coming back in, the sunlight coming back in, which is again a reminder of the Valar, but also the openness of the window to the outside world. And Sam, passing by, he passed along the path outside whistling, which again reminds us the world is not ending yet. There is still time. And then Gandalf says, the decision lies with you, but I will always help you. And this again totally frames Gandalf and his rules of engagement, I guess you could say. His mission was to come to Middle-earth and to advise and instruct and to help, but not to take up arms himself directly against Sauron. There's a reason why he went to investigate the necromancer and why he hasn't just amassed an army himself and gone and marched to Mordor in order to overthrow him. That's not his point. His point is to bring the peoples of Middle-earth together, to inspire them, to make sure that they know they can accomplish this. And then he says the line, I will help you bear this burden as long as it is yours to bear, which is another encapsulation of what we're going to see in the book. Everybody that comes along with Frodo, Sam, Merry, Pippin, the Fellowship, they're all there because they are all helping to shoulder the burden. Frodo, at no point in the journey, is alone. This is not something you could accomplish by yourself. And the one moment where he is physically alone, he's not actually alone. When he's captured by the orcs, Sam comes and saves him. He doesn't leave him. He doesn't give up. He's still there helping Frodo shoulder the burden, and in that moment even becomes a ring bearer himself in order to do so. Then Gandalf reminds him that they have to do something soon. He says the enemy is moving. And it's at this moment where they both sit down and there's this long silence. Gandalf appears to have his eyes closed, but he's watching Frodo intently from underneath his lids. I'm guessing his eyes are just slightly open. And we get this moment where Frodo looks at the embers in the hearth, and he concentrates on them. We're told that it fills his vision, and it says, he seemed to be looking down into profound wells of fire. He was thinking of the fabled cracks of doom and the terror of the fiery mountain. He's struggling with this. He's looking at fire and thinking of a much larger fire, the end of his journey. He's probably questioning if he can actually make it. He may even be in conflict with the will of the ring at this moment, but we're not told that. And then Gandalf becomes curious. He says, what are you thinking about? What have you decided to do? No, answered Frodo, coming back to himself out of the darkness and finding, to his surprise, that it was not dark and that out of the window he could see the sunlit garden. Now, this is both a surprise. He's been so focused on what his thoughts are and looking at the cracks of doom and even picturing himself at that point in the journey that he's lost sense of time. This is how seriously he feels about this moment. But he's also in his mind descending into that darkness. He's been in a dark place mentally for these moments that they've been sitting there in silence. And we're told it's a long silence. We don't know exactly how long it is. But in this moment, it feels so real to him that he's removed from the situation. And so not only is he surprised that there's still sun outside, so much time hasn't passed that it's now nighttime, but we also have a reminder again of the outside world, the beauty of nature, the sunlit garden. The Shire itself is a sunlit garden, and it's not just a garden for plants, it's a garden for people. It's a representation of what Middle-earth could be for all peoples, a place that's safe, a place where they can be connected to nature, and that's a very Tolkien-esque kind of thing. So look at the juxtaposition there. He was lost in the dark, inside a mountain, looking at fire. It is harsh, there are no living things, it is dark, it is the complete opposite of the sunlit garden. And we're going to end this section with this. Or perhaps yes, says Frodo. As far as I understand what you have said, I suppose I must keep the ring and guard it, at least for the present, whatever it may do to me. And this is probably the most brave thing that Frodo decides to do in the entire story. He does a lot of brave things. Yes, and in moments where he knows what is happening and has to react to it. But what makes this even more brave is the fact that he doesn't know what is happening. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know what will come of him. He even says, whatever it may do to me. He is sacrificing himself already in this moment, before he's even at the cracks of doom, with no understanding of exactly what will happen, the terrors that lie ahead. And yet he is willing to take it up. This is his moment of sacrifice, already decided upon. He hasn't taken the physical act yet, but he's made the decision in front of Gandalf and vowed to do what he needs to do, regardless of what happens. And Gandalf's response to this is perfect, because he confirms that this attitude, this willingness to sacrifice himself, this willingness to give of himself for others, is exactly the attitude that he needs, and is in direct contrast with the selfishness and the manipulation that is evil. And Gandalf says, whatever it may do, it will be slow, slow to evil, if you keep it with that purpose. So I hope you enjoyed the episode we did last week, the patron chat, and I'm looking forward to next month, or actually we're already in May, so this month's at the end of the month patron chat, and I'd love to have as many people as it wants to join. If you are already a VIP patron, or if you are somebody who's considering it and would love to just get together and nerd out about some of our favorite things, then come join me, patreon.com/lotrlorecast. Plus, you'll get shout outs when you sign up, like our newest patrons, Vigs. I don't know how to pronounce that. Oh, I think that's a name. I've never seen that name before. Very cool. Canon H. I'm butchering everybody's names. And JMK. We'll just say it's the. Okay, you guys know who you are. Just, man, words and names are hard. Also, thank you so much for our VIP patrons and your support. I'll read through the list in just a second, but I do want to point out that we did get a new review on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read it out on a future episode like this one from BBunno13, who says, great, 5 stars. I've only finished the first episode, but as a huge LOTR fan, it's actually a lot better than I expected. It goes in depth, but it's still sort of easy to understand. I haven't listened to any of his other podcasts, but so far this is great, and I'm excited to have something new to listen to. Also find it funny he thinks there will only be around 40 episodes and there are like 250, lol. Yeah, it kind of got bigger. That's what happened. But thank you so much for that review, B. Bunno. Maybe one of these days you'll get to this episode and you'll hear it. And then also thank you to all of our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can get through the list. Fulcrum, David S., Daniel Nightweaver, Capenna, Richard J., TJT, AK Music Lover, Barney D., Azel Razel, Blade of Anduril, Lori B., Norwegian Maiar, Mason Weathertop, Jezzer, Gimli a Break, Divine Madman, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy, Huon is My Hero, Eldarion Was Right, Avariel, Party Snacks, that one's always funny to me. Single Ent Looking for Entwives, Norwegenius, Bruce W., Artemis, Kiracy, Das S., Hunter T., Silver Star, and my name is August West. Thank you so much for your continued support and everything you guys do for me. I really do appreciate it, and I couldn't keep doing this if it wasn't for all of you. And even if you're just a listener, hey, come join us for free on the Discord. You get little notifications and things that are going on. Plus, there's a feature in there that if you hang out as a free member, they might give you an offer for like a discounted membership for like a month or two or something like that. I don't know exactly how it works because I don't get notified when people get those, but supposedly they post them on there. So, hey, Maybe that'll get you a discount and then you come join us on the VIP patron chat. That would be awesome. All right. Have a wonderful rest of your week. I'm going to go do a bonus episode. I've found some cool things to talk about regarding the Ring of Power after it was destroyed and some other people's thoughts on that. So we'll get to that in the bonus episode. Have a wonderful week and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.